raised these questions about the president's birth status, and last night you were on Fox News suggesting the president should come forward with his birth certificate as well.
John, what I've said about that is I was asked the question about that, and Republicans are constantly asked to vouch for the authenticity of the birth certificate. The only one who can is the clerk of court in the county where someone is born, and that's where people should go. Don't ask Republicans, go ask the clerk
of
court.
But actually one of your supporters in the state of Iowa has put forward a bill that would require presidential candidates to file their birth certificate with their candidacy. Do you support that?
Well, Governor Jan Brewer just vetoed that bill in Arizona because she felt that that was a bridge too far, that it wouldn't be up to the authenticators in each state to do that, that that would be a federal issue. There is a federal piece of legislation that hasn't gone anywhere that would also require that the candidates put forward their birth certificate. I have no problem giving my birth certificate. It wouldn't bother me at all. I've got one. It's authenticated. Take it.
Well, but so does the president. According to the bill, a candidate for president or vice president shall attach to and file with the affidavit, a copy of the candidate's birth certificate certified by the appropriate official in the candidate's state of birth.
And that's right.
Well, I have the president's certificate right here. It's certified. It's got a certification number. It's got the registrar of the state signed. It's got a seal on it, and it says this copy serves as prima facie evidence of the fact of birth in any court proceeding.
Well, then that should settle it.
So it's over.
That's what should settle it. I take the president at his word, and I think I would have no problem, then apparently the president wouldn't either. Introduce that, we're done. Move
so this
on.
Is over. Well, this has been introduced. So this case is this story is over.
Well, as long as someone introduces it, I guess it's over.
It's right there.
Yeah, there you go.
And so some of the things that we have done. Number one, I got a bill into the legislature right now to take the traffickers. Now, the traffickers, these are people that take drugs. These are guys under the name D-Money, Smoothie, Shifty, these type of guys that come from Connecticut, New York. They come up here, they sell their heroin, then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, which is a real sad thing, because then we have another issue that we've got to deal with down the road.
I would obviously move from the area of the feces and make sure I tell the correct authorities about the situation.
Oh, good for you! We meet again!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America. It is I, your voice of reason, Mr. Ray Lytle.
How you doing, everybody? It's Ray Lytle Show, day number two of the digital version. The internet-only version of the Ray Lytle Show. I hope you're doing well. It's Tuesday, and I warned you, Tuesdays is going to be a little bit different. All right, Tuesdays were going to be different. Show starts at 4:30. 4 o'clock other days on Tuesday, 4:30. And that's what's going on today. Thank you all for tuning in. I got a good show planned today. Reporter's Notebook happens on Tuesdays. And anybody who's listened to me, you know that I created the concept of the Reporter's Notebook. I love it. It's when we get a chance to talk local and state, national, whatever stories. And we get to do them with a reporter. And the reporter this week is the fantastic Sean Balint. Is he there? Hey, Sean, are you there? And he's not there. He was there a moment ago. I'm trying to see if I can reconnect with Sean. We've got a lot of things to talk about today. President's final State of the Union is happening tonight, which is interesting. We've got two U.S. Navy boats have been... Captured, seized, whatever word you want to use, by Iran today. They were doing a training mission somehow near Iran.
Hi, you've reached Sean.
I guess we must have lost Shawnee. I don't know what happened. He was on to join me a little bit ago, and I seem to have lost him during the intro. We do start with the Iranian situation. NBC News reporting that Iranian military forces seized two U.S. Navy boats today and are detaining them on Iran's Farsi island in the Persian Gulf. There were 10 American sailors, they were on a training mission, around noon today, noon Eastern time, so 11 our time, when one of the boats may have experienced mechanical failure and drifted into Iranian-claimed waters. Iran's Coast Guard took them into custody. The official said it's unclear whether the sailors, nine men and one woman, aboard the two small riverine vessels, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, had strayed into Iranian territorial waters before they were captured. At this point, we're still monitoring the situation, and it's not entirely clear what happened, said White House spokesman Josh Earnest. He also said that Iranian authorities confirmed to the United States that all the sailors are safe. Earnest said there remained no exact time frame for when the sailors would be let go, but didn't expect a long delay. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke with Iranian officials today in Tehran in order to secure the sailors' release. One senior official told NBC News the Iranians understand it was a mistake and have agreed to release the Americans in international waters within hours. The Persian Gulf has been a flashpoint in the Middle East, and the incident comes on the same day as the State of the Union address that President Barack Obama will be giving tonight. So there you go. There was a group of U.S. soldiers, or U.S. seamen, on a mission in the Persian Gulf. Boy, it sure seems like a lot of things. I mean, I hope that's what it is. I hope we weren't doing something else. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to put any kind of blame on us. I'm just saying that I hope that's what it is, because then there's no question it was a mistake. You know, give the guys back. Everything's fine, you know. Why would they be putting the people out there so close to Iranian waters? They say the boats were moving between Kuwait and Bahrain when U.S. officials lost contact with them. Farsi Island sits in the Persian Gulf in between Iran and Saudi Arabia. There's Shawnee. And is fortified by Iranian Revolutionary Guards. That's who got these guys. Once again, they're claiming that the ship, that one of the boats... lost power or had a technical failure or whatever and drifted into the Iranian waters. Anyway, that's the latest. We'll keep you up to date with that. Sean Bolit now joins me on the Ray Lyle Show. Hey, Shawnee.
Well, we're going to find Iran in 5 minutes.
It is good to hear from you. There you are. I can't, now I can't hear him at all. What is with your phone?
Oh.
There you go.
I don't know. You know, the internet network's always getting weird.
I don't know what's going on. Every time you're on the phone, you have the weirdest connections of anyone.
Yeah. You know, it really sucks because my new, you know, the job I've had a couple of years, they actually had a station phone. It was a step down iPhone-wise. But, you know, they have a better network. And I'm just always leery of having two phones. I'm leery of, you know, making personal calls or getting personal texts. It's hard, and I don't know, it's hard for me to juggle two phones. It's hard for me to mix personal and business on one. It's, it really, you know, Sprint upgraded before I moved back to Springfield. And it's like, oh, it's hard for me to let go of unlimited, but it does suck up here.
I know that
it does.
That's what it is. It's the Sprint that does it, you think?
Yeah, you know what? And there's other, you know, and it works just like clockwork. If my freaking boss calls me, I have had, I don't know how many calls where the boss has called me, and it doesn't even show up on the phone.
That's the worst, right?
I mean, that's just bizarre, because then you think, hey, you're just screwing with me. You're just blowing me off.
Yeah, that is the worst. When somebody you actually want to talk to, or somebody you want to speak with, actually calls you and your network drops it. Well, listen, I thank you for joining today. We got limited time. It is a Tuesday show. So I wanted to get into the Reporter's Notebook today. Anybody who's listened to me, you know that I love doing the Reporter's Notebook. It's when it's just a nice discussion with some of our fine reporters. And we discuss different things. There's a council meeting tonight, right?
Yes, sir.
What is there anything special on the agenda? Like, what kind of what things are we talking about tonight?
I think they're going to have more discussion, possibly in these ethics complaints that have been so thorny. You know, how to handle them, what the ethics committee is going to look like, and all that crazy stuff.
Let me ask you: do you think complaints have to do with the mayor's office? Those ethics complaints.
I'd have to think there's some kind of connection.
Okay, so why would the mayor be on the ethics commission if there's a chance that these complaints are going to be about his office? Is that just me being speculating too much, or you know?
I think this works for now, but the problem is the precedent set, because I think the. Maybe there's a chance one of those complaints may have fallen during the Langfelder administration, but I don't even think so, because the old inspector general, who was under contract
right.
at one point, and then that contract collapsed, and then they never really picked up the ball, shows up at a meeting, I mean, very early on after the inauguration for Langfelder, and says, hey, we've got these seven or eight cases since the contract
Wasn't it really coincidental?
They said they couldn't, these people said they couldn't get a message out to anyone, so they just left it with that Chicago company.
Don't you think it was coincidental that this Chicago company that was charging us all this money to do this, they were handling, if I'm not mistaken, they were handling the ethics complaints along with trying to help us set up how we should solve these complaints.
Right. They were basically the interim inspector general.
And they got all the complaints. They're like, well, we have to go through these, blah, blah, blah. How coincidental. Coincidentally, they finally got all the complaints right before the contract was supposed to end, to where we would have to pay them another contract in order to have them handle it. Well, our aldermen put their foot down and said no. I thank God they stood up, because these companies that get on these contracts like this is the way it always seems to happen in Springfield.
Yeah, and you know, it's a black hole of people with it's a big fat lawsuit target.
Yep.
Slip and fall suits, whatever they can come up
with. Yeah, but I'm saying that the company itself that was the company, the firm from Chicago.
You add that on top of it. Yeah, you had the people trying to make a little extra contract money, and
they want to get another contract.
It's not like it's a bottomless pit, but
so now we have.
Apparently, some people think so.
Now we have the people with the complaints, along with still no inspector general, no firm doing it, no company. So then we decide that the aldermen are going to handle it with an ethics commission. And now the mayor wants to be on it. And I'm not – now, Mayor I doubt there's any complaints against Mayor Langfelder yet, but it's still the mayor's office. So,
yes.
You know, should the mayor –
some holdovers from the previous administration.
Yeah. That's exactly – he kept a lot of the same people. So should that administration, should that mayor be on the Ethics Commission? I think that's a question that the aldermen need to ask themselves. Should that mayor – be on that commission, considering a lot of the complaints. And the past ones will have to do maybe with the last mayor, but the future ones might have to do with his administration. Will he be partial if he's got to decide on someone who he chose to be on his staff if the complaint has to do with anyone on there? And I wonder. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, and oh boy, I tell you what, it really has brought the division out to the surface. That we can, the one thing you can clearly see, the honeymoon's over. That the exchange between McMenamin and Corey Job last week.
Oh,
was,
yeah,
that was something.
Well, Sean, I mean, we got
been a pretty quiet council so far, and now that. I think it's starting. Things are changing a little bit.
Yeah, isn't it? Doesn't it figure right when I'm off of? Right when I go to the internet. You know, and then there's nobody doing the council. Have you noticed, by the way? There's no more council coverage. There's no council. I'm not doing the council recap. I don't think they're doing the council roundup anymore that I originally started on WMAY. So it's ramping up now. We're getting really good council stuff. And there's nobody covering it like we used to when I was doing it. So that's why I want to stay on top of it.
You had it down to an art form.
Hey, give me your thoughts on the Gayle Simpson situation. I gave mine yesterday, and I'll repeat them today. But Gayle Simpson was somehow, her name was put up to become a public member of this ethics commission because they mandated there had to be a public member. And people were asking the mayor to appoint Gayle Simpson.
said public member.
But my question was, is she really part of the public, considering she was, I mean, technically she's a part of the public, but she was an alderman just a few months ago.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. I think there are people who had a problem with the structure of a recent former council member being on that being on the board, but I think Joe McMenamin was pretty blunt. He told me, I can even send you that guy. He said she wasn't always the most popular person on the council. I wasn't always the most popular person on the council. So there were some memories of, it's hard to say what everybody's motivation was, but there were, I guess, a few people, whether they did it out in the open or not, didn't necessarily like, I guess, her political style, whatever, however you want to put it.
So McManaman was somehow implying, that it's more of a, trying to keep her from that commission was more of a personal thing.
I think he kind of said it was a little bit of both. It's like, she rubbed some folks the wrong way, burned some bridges, and maybe with some people, and on top of that, they just, it made it kind of sound like a half and half.
Yeah, but the ordinance they're discussing, it doesn't say that Gayle Simpson, it doesn't name her personally, it says generically that anyone who was an elected, alderman in the last so long would not be considered a member of the public. It sort of lays out the parameters, right?
Right.
And
in fact, the mayor's still, it's still a work in progress. Now the mayor's even talking about we had a committee of five, then they wanted to, then Tylan successfully got it where it was the whole council. And some people were saying, well, what the hell's the point of having the whole council?
Well, because it was unclear. Remember, it was supposed to be the odd-numbered members, but it turned out when they wrote it that it was the even-numbered members. Or no, it was supposed to be, I'm sorry, it was supposed to be the even-numbered members that were to sit on the Ethics Commission. But somehow when the original ordinance got written up, they said it was the odd-numbered members. And then there was some, and I want to say that it was Joe McMenamin again, who implied that there were some people that wanted, and I might be wrong, it might be somebody else, but there was an implication that part of it had to do with that they didn't want Sam Kamen on the board when he was there, and there was some issues like that. But that's why they went to 10, is because they were unclear on who should actually be on the board.
It's never dull, is it?
No. So tonight, are they continuing to discuss that? Tonight's Committee of the Whole, or is it full council?
Yeah,
Committee of the Whole?
It's the whole sausage. And then I think there's going to be an ethics, I believe there's the ethics committee afterwards.
So do they have a public member now? And
They don't, actually. I think they're just going to discuss the latest. And I think, I'll have to check, too. I think it's one of the first, I think the budget meetings start getting going here, too.
And help me out, because I was busy being unemployed. Last week, did they put the ordinance with the new rules for defining a public member? Was that on the consent agenda, or does that go to debate tonight?
No, they... I think they're going to revamp maybe at the end of the month, come up with a revamp proposal. The mayor's talking about, he's talking about throwing out a proposal there with three members and, he's throwing out different ideas, three members, two public members. And so I don't know if they're going to blow it up and start over, but they are going to begin the process of investigating the cases. I don't know how far they've come, but or how much the mayor may have done on that. But
What about, like, who could be someone that could be on that committee? I mean, I would like to see somebody we've never heard of, just some average Joe Blow, you know.
Yeah, you know, join some kind of attorney who's not politically connected.
But let me throw a couple names at you and tell me what you think. From, you know,
retired police officer, or some retired police officer.
That's what I was going to say. What about like
who worked somewhere else, never worked for the city of Springfield?
What about like a Neil Williamson?
You know, I mean, some would be able to say he's politically connected, but he really hasn't been.
He didn't work.
Know,
he didn't work for the city.
Tie-in, but
he didn't
he's
work
been
for
out
the city.
The Springfield Police Department for 20 years.
Yeah.
There aren't too many common people, I would imagine, on the department. Certainly, you know, there'll be a few faces in the mix, but I mean, I could see that as I could see that having legs. That's if Neil wanted to do it. He almost
what
seems
about,
like he'd rather travel the world.
What about Chico Bell?
Chico Bell, interesting.
Chico would be a good name, right?
Let's see. Chico was who was it? Chico endorsed. Was Chico? I remember Chico was. He figured somewhere in the mayor's race at one point. I can't remember who he was. It was Paul Palazzolo.
But just off, I mean, but just the
yeah,
fact that
think,
you couldn't off the top of your head, you couldn't say that. I think would mean that he's somebody.
I think
that
Chico.
Can...
I think Chico would be a good fit as far as someone who's respected for by all corners, from what I understand, and I think you came up with a pretty good name there.
I'll give you somebody else. Frank McNeil. Former alderman.
Frank's, yeah.
Frank McNeil.
Yeah, I think Frank had a little more respect than he... I think he had a respect from folks, especially the way he fought through some health issues. I think he... He's someone that's been pretty respected in all corners. I think he's got, you know, and obviously has a great intelligence or something like that. And he's not going to have a sacred cow. So I think he had another good name there.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people publicly who could, you know what I mean, who could join this commission. And, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Gail Simpson wouldn't be a fine member. I'm sure she would. I think same with Frank Edwards. I think Frank Edwards would be a great member. But I think the perception from the people would be, hey, this is supposed to be a public member, and these people were just on the council. How can you get someone that was just part of the council, especially part of the council that a lot of these complaints were against? You know, like you can't put on, it's not like you can't bring back Mayor Houston and put him on either.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. Although I think... And I do. I think highly of Frank Edwards and Gail Simpson, but they can't be on this commission. They just.
Well, I think too. There would be another argument too. Even though they didn't run for another term as alderman, you know, Frank lost a political race.
He just ran for treasurer, right?
And Gail lost a race for mayor. So
yeah.
From another perspective, you could say the voters rejected them, even though it wasn't for, you know, leader. That kind of leadership position, per se, especially in Frank's case, where it would have been, you know, treasurer. But so I think there's another argument there that maybe you can't put someone in there that the voters decided to cast aside.
Yeah, I think that is. I like that where they're going, and I don't know. Is that Tylen's baby, or I'm not sure which. Maybe it's Joe's. I don't know. Whichever one got that thing going, I think they're. They're definitely barking up the right tree there. I think that there are some people that really are behind the idea of a Gail Simpson or someone like that on the board. But I think that is, for the most part, the public would just end up saying, once again with the city of Springfield, oh, well, it's par for the course. It's just going to go to the connected people, blah, blah, blah. That seems to be what happens in Springfield. So why even give them the opportunity to do that when a simple definition of what a public member is can take that out of the equation. If they were to announce, imagine if they were to put Mayor Houston on the board right now. Considering some of the complaints are about him.
That would be.
What is the uproar? How do we know that the complaints weren't against the last city council of which Gail Simpson was on? It just seems to me that if someone was recently elected and is gone. Now, if it's someone who hasn't been elected for many, like, say, former Mayor Hasera, or, you know, I mean, someone who used to be in city government and is no longer, and has been gone for so many years, I think you can look at that. Like I mentioned, Frank McNeil, I think you can, I think that would be, you know, the kind of thing you're looking for. But anybody who's recently been part of the administration, or somebody who's recently worked for the city, or someone who has been on the an alderman on the actual city council, I think that, that they can't be a public member. By the way, I'd like to hear.
Yeah, I think Frank's been gone, what, 12 years, I believe.
You know who they should put on? They should put in like that James Johnson or James Meester.
Well, he would definitely make it interesting. He'd be good for. You want to talk about a reason to bring the council roundup back? There you go.
Hey, let me ask you a question. You know James Meester or Meister, whatever, how you pronounce that guy's name?
Yes, he's quite the regular.
Okay. Wasn't he a fan of the Morning Disaster when we did that show?
I have to. You know what? His name sure.
When you ask,
his name sure seems to ring a bell.
When you talk, if you see him tonight, I know you're going to the council meeting here in a little bit. When you see him, because he's there every week, isn't he?
Pretty much.
Is he up there? All right. Ask him. Say, dude, when you called the Morning Disaster, what name did you go by? Ask him, because I know he was a regular listener to the Morning Disaster.
Yeah.
That voice is just too familiar.
Yeah, he's got some interesting claims. You want to talk about local, well, there's no fatalities involved, but he's got some kind of tale that sounds like making of a murderer or something.
Yeah, he's always floating.
Talking about these arson, saying someone's out there an arsonist, and no one's investigating it, and they're still out there. And
well, he's the guy that hung the stuff. Didn't he hang the stuff from his tree in effigy or something?
You know what?
He made it like around Christmas of 2014. He made some kind of garbage tree, or he did something in making some statement that was just ridiculous against the city. All right, so that's what else are they talking about at the council?
He's determined. I mean, he's pretty much there every week.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, let's see here. What else is? Well, we're closing in on. There may be some more discussion too on this. Symantec, I can't remember the exact, Stantec, I think that's it. You know, as far as the discussion, maybe getting some consultant input on what to do with the YWCA, or the, what do they call it, the North Executive Mansion Block. And I'll tell you, here's what I think. I mean, of course, you know, you want developers to have something to do. You want to create jobs. I personally think have a mini Millennial Park, and if they do move, if somehow the feds get the money somehow and have a change of course and this rail consolidation thing happens on 10th, of course, it's not going to happen overnight. I think you could have like a mini Millennial Park. And just mow that building, that moldy building down and
yeah, but
have
don't
some
they...
space and something that might draw people to live downtown.
Aren't they looking for something that is going to immediately bring in tax dollars, though? I mean,
yeah, that's what they're talking about. I, you know, and again, I'm, you know, what I think of, it may not have the instant sizzle, but I think if you had a park, those trains move out, you could buy out INB, which, you know, they got a nice little building, but it's not a big historic architectural masterpiece, and connect the Capitol and downtown. I mean, yeah, you're not going to have the sizzle, but maybe the instant sizzle of something new, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, they constantly have these studies come back saying that they need to have more residential stuff downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, they're constantly coming in. There has to be more residential stuff. So why not build something like that where people can put, you know, where people will put housing around it and maybe somewhere nice where people would want to live? But I think,
and, you know,
I don't think that's what they're looking for. It seems to me like you got companies like that, the one company you mentioned, the one from Boston, like that are interested in getting our TIF dollars, you know, and, you know, getting that. Everybody seems to want that TIF money. And there are developers who want that TIF money. But it does seem like the city wants someone who's going to develop something and immediately start paying property taxes. Or somebody that's going to be selling something to immediately start paying sales taxes. That's just the feeling that I get.
Well, you know, it really, downtown needs some kind of shot in the arm. I mean, that, especially that history block where those restaurants, I mean, just like, it looks like someone played a game of dominoes with the going out of business signs.
And yeah, who's gone out of business in the last couple of weeks?
Well, let's see here. Of course, you know, you had Sebastian's a few months ago.
Right.
Then you had Del Rio's Super Tacos. I don't know when they went out. But I went there 12:30 in the middle of the week, in the middle of lunch hour, and I was the only guy there, and someone else walked in.
At so 12:30 they went out. In the
Bento's
week.
And then you just had...
yeah, Bento's is gone.
You just had Brick House go out.
Now the Brick House. And then down the street, you've got, I mean, down a ways on Cook, you got Julia's Kitchen. Right? Didn't Julia's just go?
Yeah. I don't know. You still see some, you know, you still see some crowds here and there on the weekends for, you know, like the Vinegar Hill Mall. But, gee, I mean, you know, Donnie's Homespun went out.
Yeah.
That went out.
It might be. That
and then Chipardo's. I don't know how they're doing. Chipardo's is in the old Bowers Steakhouse.
See, that could be. I mean, that could be a location issue. It really. I mean, that's something to consider. And those are cool buildings. I mean, I have such fond memories of the Atrium.
Oh,
back in
the
day,
that was the best.
But they had the one pizza place in there for a long time.
Yeah, they had the pizza machine. I thought that should have done better, but
and the
never...
pizza was the pizza was fantastic. But
yeah,
you know, it's just it was such a pain to get down there. You know, and I really feel this affects that whole area. Is that there's a weird parking? You got to park, and you get out, and you got to cross the way. I think that people are lazy, and people like to be able to park right in front of the building.
Oh, no doubt.
And I really do. I mean, I think that parking is an issue for downtown places. People are lazy. They don't want to have to park and walk a couple of blocks to eat when you can go to a place and park right in front.
Well, you know, in the Vinegar Hill Mall, it's a great building. It's classic and everything else. But it's just like, and it's, you know, the problems too. That area around the Vinegar Hill Mall, as you go south of the Capitol, I mean, you just, you know, Periwinkle's used to be there. You'd see this nice business with all this vibrant color, and now you just have that run-down convenience store and, you know, all of the fringe of society living off the grid-type services, and it just looks bad. Now State Museum's closed, and I don't know how you change it. I mean, you like the classic fancy brickwork, but you can't see when you're driving by. You know, that's the best advertising in the world when you drive by and you see people inside enjoying what they're eating and enjoying themselves. And you can't see what's going on in the inside of the Vinegar Hill Mall.
It does
so
seem
there's no, like, because, you know, it is. It's like saturation advertising. It's like, boy, it looks like people are having a good time in there. I think I want to stop there.
There does seem to be a trend here of restaurants closing, though, in the last. I mean, look, you got what's been announced. Julia's, of course, Brick House served food. Didn't they announce Three Tomasos is now closing?
Yeah, Three Tomasos because of the. The infamous someday my outlet mall will come.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another location problem, which is what they said with Quaker Steak and Lube. Although I think Quaker Steak and Lube was doing well. That was a problem with the franchisee. You know what I mean?
In fact, the whole chain just went bankrupt. They were acquired by Travel America. So whether they might, you know, like they run some rest stops, truck stops. Truck stop / tourist stops, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I know some people were hopeful that maybe that would get that going again.
That's a great building, and I just don't know if they're ever going to build that damn outlet mall. We've been promised that outlet mall now for, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
Since before Shields opened up, they've been telling us, oh, there's an outlet mall coming in. And now it's still, there's. No, I mean, it's just Shields.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you've got to do more. You got to do more to get people off that 55. You know, get them off the 55 path. And you wonder if, like, when they built Shields, like, if they were misled, just looking at the traffic numbers going from 55 to Veterans Parkway, like local numbers, and they probably thought, you know, people from I don't know.
I'll tell you, Shields, but Sean, I mean, Shields.
Maybe they got a bad read.
Shields does a good business, though. I mean, I never drive by Shields where it isn't busy. Or at least, I mean, that could be all the, it could just be employees' cars, but man, the parking lot always looks busy at Shields.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. How many, and you know, having been in there, you know, a pretty good handful of times, I wonder sometimes if they have enough buyers in there, because you see a lot of people, oh, I'm going to buy a $5 hat. I'm going to look at fish. I'm going to get on the Ferris wheel. I'm going to buy a little candy, but we're not actually going to buy anything.
I'll tell you what they do have that I find interesting, though, is it does seem every time I'm there, I see people that are in town from Peoria or Bloomington, Jacksonville, St. Louis Metro, you know, people that have come basically just for Shields. And it is strange that we're not capitalizing off that, you know, because so many people from out of town are going there. But that's the only thing there is around there. Like, those people would be going, well, we're going to get something to eat. Well, I don't know. There's no, you know. Like, they're coming here for Shields, and we're not giving them anything else to do while they're in town.
It really is. It seems sometimes like the city can't buy a break.
And, I've said this before. I've said this before, and I'll say it now. Right there in that lot, if they're not going to build that outlet mall, then I say, you know, give up your rights to the property and allow someone to put in a movie theater, a quality 16-plex with an IMAX movie theater, because to me that is a perfect, and I do mean perfect, location for a gigantic movie theater that would compete with AMC and the 12.
I would love that.
I think it would be a perfect location.
You know me, I'm a big fan of the Warenberg chain from the St. Louis area, and they're up in Bloomington, so they've gone into that market. So it wouldn't be the first time they've gone to the market as a standalone.
We do love movies. We love movies in Central Illinois. The movies are always packed. I'm seeing a really good theater with an IMAX screen. I tell you what.
Yeah.
I think
it would be a
winner.
Better than AMC.
Yeah.
And their rewards program is better than AMC, you know, and you don't have to pay a dime for it.
I think you would see, if for no other reason, I think it would force AMC to step up their game.
Yeah.
If there was some type of competition, because right now there's nobody else in town. They've got three theaters and there's no one else. I mean, except unless you consider the drive-through to be, you know, to be some type of competition. Okay, we're running out of time. I know you got to go to the council meeting. Let's get to tonight is President Obama's final State of the Union. What are you expecting, Sean Balint?
A lot of kumbaya. I imagine the education thing will come up, and he's going to probably, because they're just going to continue to try to repeal Obamacare. I would expect a big progress report on that, and who knows, maybe the police thing comes up, and I don't know, it's really hard to believe it's 1 year left.
See, I think
like yesterday.
I think it's got to be different from his last
office at State Senate figuring out how to pronounce his name.
When Emil Jones was introducing him to you, well, Barack Obama.
Time to commit the.
I miss Emil Jones.
The opportunity and the possible. Emil the lifesaver, you know? Yeah. You know, hey, I'm choking. And, well, I forgot that was Augie's where somebody was choking to death.
He gave him the Heimlich.
Emil stepped in.
Emil gave him a Heimlich.
Let me clear your throat.
Oh, get yourself out the way. Let Emil come in and help you out.
I can't get Emil's speech. I'm not gonna say impediment. I'm not gonna say impediment
like
because obviously
for Shaggy.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a love and a hang over the meaning.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna say impediment, but there was something going on there that Emil had a very distinct voice.
Very unusual.
But it did not impede him in the least.
No.
Even talking like he did, Emo was still... I can't even begin to impersonate him. Okay, so my thoughts on the State of the Union. Usually, Obama has these far-reaching State of the Unions where he lays out a plan and we're going to do this and we're going to do this, blah, blah. I think tonight you're not going to see that. I think you're going to see, because he doesn't have time. He's only got a year. I think you're going to see a president that realizes, you know what, I have crapped away a lot of this 7 years. I've got one left. I've got to do something. So, in other words, he doesn't have time to put together a list of six or seven things. He's going to have time to get like one or two really important things done. You know, what can those things be? And I think if he's being serious, then it's going to be one or two things. I think if he lays out a list of 10 things he wants to do, he's making a huge mistake because he's not going to get them done. And I think he's risking hurting his legacy because it'll just add to the list of things he hasn't been able to get done while being president.
And I'm sure the emissions thing will come up again, too. I get the feeling they'll get that in. Climate change, and I figure that'll come into play since that's something he's, you know, I guess the approval process is going to stretch possibly beyond his administration.
I think that some of these things he has floated, though, were good ideas that have gone nowhere. I'll give you a prime example of one. Community college, you know, a cost-effective or free community college is a great idea and something we need in this country. I mean, so many other countries have this. And it gives kids a jump start on advanced and higher education. And I'll tell you what, considering we have so many parents that are now living on minimum wage, the children are being penalized that can't afford school. And we're putting these kids at such a disadvantage with these student loans. Any more people need student loans in order to go to junior college, to go to community college.
Well,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect, you know, for these people. The single parent families out there, and they have to find a career and quick. I think you're on the money, and you can kind of see just how important that is, because I look at these people, young people out there in that situation, who don't have their damn MAP grants. All of a sudden it's like, well, you know, the school can't front me. And like, you know, you have all these people that are, you know, really on the edge of limbo. It's like, well, if they can't keep their schooling going, and usually they have some kind of agreement with family. It's like, hey, I'll watch your kids if you take this program. Or, you know, they have all these different situations where they can't just drop their education and come back to it.
Yeah.
And you see what the MAP grant's doing. So, well, I'm telling you, if you make that a more, yeah, if you lock that in for people, I mean, you know, people can talk about the cost or whatever, but, you know, they can disagree. But I think as far as a principle, as far as the cost involved, there's a lot of merit to it.
Yeah, I think the community college, we need to find a way. Listen, and there are some people that seem to think that if we do this, we're going to be stopping rich children from going to private school. Nobody is doing that. You know, no one is telling people with means that your kids can't go to private school. They're just saying that, hey, we're going to make it affordable so that everyone who wants to, everyone can go to a community college. And I think that there's certainly nothing, there's nothing wrong with coming up with a plan that allows someone to get a higher education.
I'll tell you, isn't it impressive with everything that's gone wrong in education? And I think, I personally think No Child Left Behind was a terrible concept. Basically, we're, instead of fixing a school, you know how it is, these inner city neighborhoods, the bad schools drag down the neighborhood. People move out.
Well, you know what, but it also comes from, but
when all of a sudden you're saying, hey, we're going to hold people accountable for kids who don't care. And then we're also going to, financially devastate further.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be nice in theory, but I'm glad to see it. Well,
because they came at it with No Child Left Behind. They came at it from the standpoint of rather than helping the child or helping this country, they came at it from the standpoint of hurting the unions. Which, by the way, We've got to get past this. We've got to get past this hatred and fear of unions. Because that's why they passed that law. They passed that law, for a couple of reasons. But one of them is that they wanted to take away union power. That's they don't like the teachers' union for whatever reason. The whole common boy, people are so afraid of Common Core math, and we are screwed up as our education is definitely screwed up. By the way, I hear that Andy Menard's education bill is, they're still moving forward with some stuff. I don't know if it's ever going to get passed. But the more I hear what he's got planned for the state of Illinois, the more I like it. I wish that would get some legs. Let me ask you this. Washington Post had an article today saying that Ted Cruz is not eligible to be president or vice president of the United States.
Interesting.
Your thoughts?
I have to read up on that a little more, but
well, it's got to do with figuring out the intent of what the framers of the Constitution meant when they said you must be a natural born citizen. Is someone who has a parent that is natural born, are they natural born?
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's the great thing about the Constitution is its simplicity, and the awful thing about the Constitution is its simplicity.
Well, I mean, we had someone run for president who was not born in the United States. John McCain was born in Panama or something, wasn't he? Wasn't he born somewhere like Panama? He was born on a military base, or I don't know. So he was either born on a military base, they immediately took him to a military base, whatever. His father was in the service, and his mother was with his father when she gave birth. And he ran. He didn't win. We've never had a challenge for someone to win. And as many people think that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, he was not. there is a question, and some of the Republicans are starting to ask questions and say, wait a minute. Is he eligible? And you know who's going to float this. I mean, do we even need to guess who's going to float this?
So the question is Ted Cruz, is he a natural born citizen? If he were lucky enough to win, which I don't think he's going to, but if he were lucky enough to win and he's your candidate, he's going to be sued by the Democrats. They've already said they are going to be suing him on the definition, and it's right here. On the definition, is he natural born? And a lot of people think that means you have to be born on the land, not born in Canada. And he was born in Canada. So Professor Lawrence Tribe is the expert. He says you got a lot of problems there. Let's see what happens. I mean, but there is a doubt. We can't have a doubt. We can win this election. We can win it fast. And I say this as a friend of the party and as a friend of Ted. He's got to go in and get a declaratory judgment. He's got to get a ruling to determine if he wins, can he run? Is he allowed to run? Is he allowed to serve? Does that make sense to anybody? So that's it.
I think we all knew. Go ahead. I think all of us knew who would be the troublemaker when...
Indeed.
We all knew who was going to be bringing this up.
Oh, yeah.
The one and only Donald Trump. He's not the only one talking about it. Rand Paul also threw in his opinion.
There's been some chatter lately about the whole Ted Cruz being a natural born citizen lately. Where do you lie here? And do you think it's becoming a big distraction from the GOP field?
I think it'll be something that he has to overcome, basically. Being born in Canada, I don't think we've had a president who's not born in the United States before. And I don't think the courts have decided really what it means to be natural born, and it is a constitutional requirement. There's been hundreds of years of statutes on what it means to be a citizen, whether it means a father, a citizen, mother, but it's varied over about 200 years. We decided, I think, one court case on Goldwater whether or not Arizona was a U.S. territory, was part of the United States. But unless you're going to say Canada was a U.S. territory, I don't think you have much of an argument there. But I think there will be a court case. The Democrats have already said they will challenge his eligibility. I think Alan Grayson indicated that he's looking at preparing a lawsuit should Cruz be. I don't know if it'll be a huge distraction, but it's going to have to be answered, you know, and so we'll see.
Well, Donald Trump has brought up, you know, him getting a declaratory judgment. I mean, do you agree with that? What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a potential problem for Cruz. And like I said, we've never, ever had a president that wasn't born in the United States. And so a lot of people would have thought natural-born citizen meant born in the U.S. How the courts will decide this, I think, is unknown. Like I said, the courts never heard this.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds to me like you've got a couple of big Republican voices that are, you know, standing up and saying that it sounds to me like they're saying that Cruz should just give it up. Why go through the trouble if he's just going to get sued?
Never a dull moment.
Yeah. And by the way, who didn't see this coming?
Yeah.
Who didn't? I said yesterday that this makes no difference to me. I don't care. I think as long as you've been living in America for so many years, you should be allowed to run. But who didn't see this coming? The man was born in Canada. He should have seen this coming. Donald Trump is right. He should have gotten a declaratory judgment and known well in advance if he was eligible. And I'll tell you, I think there's a reason that Cruz doesn't get a declaratory judgment, and I think that Trump might be onto something. Worst thing that could happen to the Republican Party, though, is this guy ends up winning and then can't run. I think it's a bad thing.
That would be something they talk about 300 years from now.
All right, last but not least, last question, Sean. Will we still be talking about Sean Penn and El Chapo a week from now? Or does it have a short shelf life?
That's a good question. That is a heck of a question because I guess you can base it on what else is going on. Because I'll tell you what, it is damn fascinating. And, you know, and I mean, if you're Sean Penn, I have to think even if he had nothing to do with it, you know, it's like people are going to be suspicious and I'm sure he's got to be looking over his shoulder. I haven't seen the video yet, but I heard that was some pretty intense video. They showed El Chapo's guys, boy, they were just going, they gave it their all to try and keep him from being recaptured.
El Chapo. They did. There was an interesting article. Interesting article, and I'll end on this because I know you got to go into the council meeting. They asked people from Iowa, about Ted Cruz. Do you believe Ted Cruz was really born in the United States? And more people thought Ted Cruz was born in the United States than Barack Obama. They asked if Barack Obama was born in the United States or if they thought Ted Cruz was really born in the United States. 34% of Iowa Republicans said that they believe Ted Cruz was really born in the United States. And only 28% of them said Barack Obama was really born in the United States. So you've got 72% of these Iowans thought Barack Obama was secretly born in Kenya. And even though it is public knowledge that Ted Cruz was born in Canada, 34% of them said, no, he was secretly born in the United States. There you go. Sean Bullitt, listen, good job. Thank you, man. I love it. Doing the reporter's notebook with you was fun. It was easy. I loved our discussion on the council. I hope there's some good stuff tonight. And I'd love to have you back on whenever you would like.
You know it, brother.
It was just fantastic. Thank you. Sean Bolin joining
us. You lucked out because you know a guy without a social life. So.
And you're a guy that I don't have to worry about you being on a date or something when the show's airing. Listen.
No, I've always been very, very considerate over the years, but I've never let women or dates or sexual trips get in the way of helping you out. I'm just that kind of selfless guy.
You're always willing to help out. Listen, thank you, Shawnee.
Never will I let another female conquest get in the way of helping you out.
I thank you as always. Listen, go do the council meeting.
I think I will.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you, my friend. Sean Bolin. Joining us for the Reporter's Notebook.
I think you do.
On the Ray Lytle Show. 81, thank you, buddy. 814-0332. If you'd like to call it, I have time to take a couple phone calls before we leave today. That's 814-0332. I would love your thoughts if you want to join in and discuss Ted Cruz and his eligibility. I'd love to hear. Like I said, I don't care. Let him run for president. But are there people that are really against this? Are there people that really don't like the precedent that could be set if he were to be able to run? I would love to hear it. Also, anything else you want to talk about, I'll give you a couple minutes to try to call. I know a lot of you are listening on your phones, and therefore it's hard to call in when you're listening on your smartphone. I completely understand that, which is why, as I say, I always try to plan. We try to plan the shows to where we don't have to take calls. However, if someone would like to call, I would love to, have you do so. All right? So if you feel like calling in, the number is 814-0332. That is the number you need to know if you ever feel like calling this show. What else did I had a list of things I wanted to cover, and I know Tuesday's weird because I do have to run out and host Ask the Expert. I don't know how long that's going to go. I know that I'll do it as long as they want me to. I don't know how long that is going to last. But as long as that is the case, the Ray Lytle Show on Tuesdays will not start till 4:30. Other days, we'll get it up and going by 4, all right? Other days, we'll get it going by 4. I told you, let me take a phone call. Hi, you are on the Ray Lytle Show. Hello.
It's not conservative crime fighter, your buddy.
Conservative crime fighter. Hello, Steve. How are you?
All right. I don't know what you covered today, but
I'll tell you what we were just discussing the fact that Donald Trump and Rand Paul, both publicly came out saying that Ted Cruz's eligibility to run for president is a real thing, and we need to figure that out before Trump says he doesn't think that Cruz is going to win, but he says if he does, we should probably know.
That was in the back of my mind, but...
Yeah. But no, you can talk about whatever you want. Anything you want to talk about, Steve, go ahead.
I think the one thing that's on my mind is the future of local talk radio. Because you're obviously, on the outside looking in, apart from the 1 hour of Ask the Expert...
Yeah, and that's I do that for Memorial, so it's really not, and it's a set subject. It's really not.
I'm not even sure how long that's going to last with you.
No, that's what I said. I have no idea. It could end tonight. It could end next week, or it could go on for months. I don't know, but
for the reporters at TAX to take that over.
What are you
off the payroll or something?
What is your concern with? With the local talk radio, what are you saying?
It's obviously your old employer. Well, previous to TAX, WMAY.
Right.
There's only one person on the air that I just have any interest to listen to, and that's Bishop on the drive to work. Beyond that,
They do have local people. I mean, there are local people.
There are local people, yeah. But Leach, I can't take Leach seriously. I can't even listen to him.
but he is local.
I haven't been able to listen to him for years.
You might not like him or agree with him, but he, you know, he's definitely local.
Yeah, he's local, but not tolerable. I can't tolerate sports talk on a daily basis on another station. I'm not even sure that's local. I think that's national or semi-local. I don't know.
What are you talking about? The what?
WFMB. I mean, that's sports.
Well, yeah, they do the sports thing. But yeah, they have they're local. I mean,
I'm not into the local teams per se.
Yeah, but I think they go local sports like 4 to 5. I mean, the press box, they have that's on every afternoon, and that's local. I mean, there are some local afternoon shows. It's definitely not like it was, you know, 10 years ago.
No, that's definitely true.
That's dead.
We had George Dreyer, Mike Wilson, who else? Jason Lee. Gertie.
Yeah, I'm saying there's just been a lot, but there's been a lot of changes in radio in general. There's been changes, and a lot of it comes from, you know, at one point there used to be a lot of national advertisers that would pump money into markets. And when the ratings went away, and this is funny because, you know, radios, they sort of bit themselves in the... You know, listen, they shot themselves in the foot with this one. There used to be Arbitron ratings in town.
And that's another thing.
And everybody paid
for one of those things out a couple of years ago.
The
of
Arbitron,
we never see the results of it.
Well, no, because, and I'll explain to you. There were Arbitron ratings in town, and people bought the Arbitron ratings, and it cost, I mean, it was several thousand, it was a lot of money to buy them. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was $12,000 to $15,000, or maybe it might have been more than that. That it costs to have the ratings come to town. And they would rate the market, and then they would publicly put them out there, and advertising agencies, national advertising agencies, would buy on behalf of their franchisees, they would buy advertising time. And you'd have commercials for places like Sears and more, and all the fast food restaurants, the McDonald's, your Pepsi, you know, all of your soft drinks, your beers, your... A lot of these different places would advertise, and they would make up for a large part of your advertising base. And I remember back in the days of the Morning Disaster, especially when we were the number one show in the whole city. This is, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. They were huge, and we also had that the 18 to 49 audience, we dominated. So there was a considerable amount of money coming into that show. But we had the ratings to prove it, and national advertisers were spending the money. Well, because of the cost of the ratings, a couple radio companies dropped them. And after they dropped the ratings, the national advertisers didn't have any way to gauge what was going on, so they just stopped spending money here.
So basically...
And that really hurt the market.
Idea. Then, who is popular and who's just blowing wind?
Well, because an advertising agency, like say a Leo Burnett, a huge advertising agency in Chicago back in the day, they don't have anyone living in Springfield, Illinois. They can't tell you, oh, the Morning Disaster, or Brian and Kelly, or John and Michelle, or Dave and Dina, or whoever at the time was the best shows. They didn't have they didn't know us from Adam. But here's what they did know. They knew that they had an Arbitron ratings book on their desk that told them that this show is getting these numbers in this time slot or for this demographic. And they would make their buys. And they'd say, oh, you know what? Let's put $20,000 a year into the Springfield market and put it, you know, put so much of it on this show or put so much of it on that show, blah, blah, blah. Now, because there's no ratings, they have no idea what's going on here. Now, you mentioned that there are still some ratings, yes, but there's only one company that buys the ratings. So, when those ratings come out, if it is positive for your stations, okay, then you make the ratings public. But if your stations aren't the number one stations, or your stations have anything wrong with them, then you can very easily just say, you know what, we're not going to make them public. And the way it's set up, it's hard for any one company. It's hard for any one company to have everything be positive. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
It's almost impossible. So at some point, I imagine even that company is going to stop paying for the ratings, which will also end up hurting the national sales. Because that company does use the ratings to send to national advertising agencies and say, hey, look, our show here is doing this, blah, 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 and they'll send money to top. So that hurts. Number two, the other thing is that means you have to rely on all local advertising. So it means you're only going to bring in so much money. For example, back in the day, and I'll give this number because it's been long enough, I believe I could legally say this. You know, I had a contract that was based on me getting a percentage of sales. For example, in 2003, it was either two, three, or four, somewhere in there, WQLZ, which is where I was working at the time, our take in advertising was $1.2 million. That's what we brought in advertising as a single station, $1.2 or $1.25 million. I forget. It was either $1.15 or $1.25 million. WNNS, which was also in the building, was also bringing in over $1 million. And at the time, Glenn Gardner, who's the general manager of the radio station, you know, Glenn was thinking, if we keep going, if we keep doing this, we could have a $3 million year. And we did. I think we actually hit $3 million in revenue. And I think we might have even hit four at one point before the bottom fell out. There were times where stations would be making that much money. From what I understand, and I don't know for sure because I was in management then. I'm not in management now. But from what I understand now, if any station in town can clear $500,000, it's a successful year. So we go back to the days of QLZ, and every show on the station was live. And, you know, the Morning Disaster had five cast members being paid. And those days like that. And we had a live midday show, and a live afternoon show, and a live night show, even a live overnight show. But we were bringing in $1.15 million a year, $1.25 million a year. It was easy for us to pay all those people. Well, when after the Morning Disaster left, and I'm certainly not saying the Morning Disaster had anything to do with this, but the facts will show that the timing is what it is. When I left WQLZ, when Morning Disaster went away, the very next year, advertising went down. It went down again after that, went down again after that. And eventually, they had no choice. Their expenses were greater than the amount of revenue coming in. So they had to make cuts. So they cut the overnight guy. Then they cut the night guy. Then they cut the midday guy. And then eventually they cut the afternoon guy. And now they have, you know, one show. And
it's
that's
on autopilot. So to speak.
Yes, and that's a lot of radio stations are doing the same thing. It's cheaper to run. And so, you know, when Charlie was quoted in the paper saying that my thing was business, it was. Charlie Ferguson and I consider him a friend. There's no personal thing between us. I was not let go from Capital Radio Group because of any personal issue, as far as I know. And I know there wasn't a personal issue on my end, and I don't think there was any personal. There wasn't a personal issue on their end. The reason I was let go was business. And when he says business, he means
he couldn't afford to pay anymore.
Yes, they were paying me a salary. The shows they put on now, I think they're running two shows, whatever they are. The two shows they're putting out cost them nothing. They don't have to pay for them. In fact, those shows exist.
Well, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Mark Levin was on TAX before you came on.
Yes.
At one time.
Yes.
They dropped it because
the advertising wasn't coming in.
Well, I thought they had to pay like some sort of fee to run the show on the station, or at least pay.
Here's how money
went to Levin's.
Here's how it works. Here's how it works. There are groups willing to underwrite conservative talk show hosts, and there aren't groups willing to underwrite liberal talk show hosts. That's a fact. It's a fact of life. That is a fact. Liberal-based radio, which is why there are no syndicated liberal hosts, has been a loser in terms of advertising or underwriting revenue. There are major corporations that will underwrite and policy groups and think tanks, things like that, that will underwrite conservative hosts. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened to WTAX. I'm saying nationally this happens. Rush Limbaugh have
with some Wall Street Journal host, and that show didn't last. That show got canceled.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is canceled nationwide.
But Steve, what I'm saying is that there are conservative talk shows that are underwritten by corporate interest. There are no liberal talk shows like when Janine Garofalo tried to remember she tried to do a national show. Number one, the show wasn't very good because she was a comedian. She didn't come from radio. So it wasn't a very good show. Number two, it came from a very liberal standpoint. I mean, her liberalism was very far left. And number three, she was very anti-corporation. She was very anti-business. Well, these are the people that choose where their advertising dollars go. And if you're anti-business, they're certainly not going to put any money on your program. So, I mean, there's a lot of problems that they have had with that. But there are, for major cities, there are conservative groups that will underwrite conservative talk shows. So, in a lot of cases, and I'm not saying that's certainly not what happened to WTAX. It was just a case of they could get those shows for free, whereas with me, they had to pay me money. But I'm saying
Mark Levin might carry a show.
In bigger market, yeah. But somebody else would pick up the cost. But someone else would pick up the cost.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that started happening all over the big markets, right? And that sort of stuff trickles down. Smaller markets see it, and corporations that own radio stations say, we have a quota of money we have to take in. We have to answer to shareholders. And so we've got to get this much profit. And as much as they liked me personally, and as much as I liked them personally, for me it became a case of they were taking in more advertising when I was making, but it wasn't enough of a wide enough gap. It had to be more than that, especially with what they were paying me. And I'm a person who... I'm a victim of my own success because I have name recognition and success in this market. I'm not very cheap. You're not going to get me for $30,000 a year. You're not going to get me for $40,000 a year. You know what I mean? You're not going to get me cheap like you can get other people because of my name recognition and because
you're an icon.
Yeah, because of the amount
you're an icon level.
Yeah, and because of that, it hurts me because the amount of money I make per year is more than the amount of money that some other people will make a year. And at some point, that comes back to hurt you because when they have to make a cut, they got to say, yeah, you know, we're paying this guy this much money. So my problem is that I was a, your words, not mine, an iconic morning show personality for Springfield, Illinois, doing an afternoon show. And I appreciate the fact that my company was willing to pay me morning show money in the afternoon, but they just could not afford it anymore, and that's why I'm gone. That's happened everywhere, not just to me, but it's happened everywhere. So a lot of markets the size of Springfield, that's why you're seeing more syndication. That's why you're seeing more automation. And it's a shame because I tend to think...
pretty soon is everybody's going to be kind of running their station like SiriusXM, autopilot
or
something.
That's what I mean. I think it ends up hurting the listeners. I really do. And I tell you what, I also think it ends up hurting the advertisers because I think local shows that can take calls and do things have have more effect. A compelling show is going to make someone sit through the commercials. And I think that local shows tend to be more compelling than national shows because they can talk about local things. And you know what? Listen, last but not least, the internet has come in and more people are listening to audio on podcasts. More people are listening. They're spending their time doing other things. So all those things come together. It does hurt radio. That being said, this is why I want to try this out, Steve. I want to try this. We're going to see if it works.
You've done this before. This isn't a stranger to you.
Yes, and in doing it before, the cost when I did this before in 2012. No, I did this before in 2006 is when I first did this. And then I did it again in like 2010. 2009, 2010.
WMAY and TAX.
No, I was hired by WTAX within 20 minutes after I was fired from MAY. I was never even technically unemployed. I mean, they hired the same day. But before I went to MAY, I did it. So, I don't know if I can legally talk about anything, but my fingers are crossed that hopefully I can, if I decide to go back. If I decide to go back to radio, I think that I will
not go too far.
Yeah, I think that I can stay in the Springfield area. Possibly. We'll see. But I'd like to give this a shot. And I don't know if it'll work. I don't know. I see the numbers of people listening the first 2 days. They seem pretty good. We'll see if it catches on. We'll see if anybody's interested in buying advertising when I sell it. I definitely don't want to do a subscriber model, but I do know that guys like you calling in and arguing with me from time to time the way you do.
And you need it half the time.
Yes, will only make the show more entertaining. So I appreciate the call, but it's 6 o'clock. I got to wrap this thing up. President Obama's final State of the Union is on tonight, Steve, and I'd love to discuss it with you tomorrow after we hear the great things that come out of our president's mouth tonight that we can all get behind and be excited
about. The GOP debate will be more interesting. Sorry.
Thank you, Steve. There you go. That's a conservative crime fighter, one of my favorite callers. We very rarely disagree. I mean, we very rarely agree. But
we just plug it out a lot.
He's the most fun person to disagree with. Thank you, Steve. That's going to wrap it up, people. Thank you for listening. It is the Ray Lytle Show. Be back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. That's 4 o'clock tomorrow with another episode of the show. Thanks to Sean Bolin for joining me for Reporter's Notebook today. Have a fantastic Tuesday. Catch me with the Morning Disaster tomorrow morning starting at 8:30 at morningdisaster.net and then right back here tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock for the Ray Lytle Show on SpringfieldTalk.com. So long, everybody.